Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I'm your host, Julian McLaughlin. My guest today is Patrick Shavesty, who is the founder and CEO of Omni Premier Marketing. Today, we're going to be discussing Patrick's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thank you so much for joining us today, Patrick.
Hey, Julia. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm honored to be here. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit. So what would you say really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
So I think that's a really good question, and everybody has to have their why they're doing what they're doing. And if you don't have one, you probably should kind of think about that for a while, right? How far are you going to get if you don't have a reason to go there?
Yeah.
You know, for me, and it's quite personal. I have a 17-year-old son who's autistic, who will never be able to take care of himself. And while I was younger, it was materialistic things. And don't get me wrong, I still like really nice things. I do.
Yeah.
My why was more materialistic. When I was younger, I cared more about just doing something for the reward of actually doing it. Like, let's see what I can do. Kind of like climbing a 14,000-foot mountain. It's not something I enjoy doing, but a lot of people do it just for the personal challenge and to kind of defy odds. That was a big part of it. Nice stuff was a big part of it, but now my why has really shifted. As I'm 47 years old, the most important thing to me right now is making sure that my son Jack is taken care of after I'm off this planet. Mm-hmm. And you know, making sure that he has all of the resources that he needs to make sure that he's properly taken care of for the rest of his life. So I have the blessing of having this why that is really impactful and meaningful. A lot of people aren't going to have that, and that's fine. But I definitely think if it involves helping other people, whether it's someone you know or someone overseas or what have you, that's a huge why, and consider doing something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Just having that driving force that's going to motivate you through those hard times is so powerful. That's really incredible that you've got your son to really motivate you to, you know, provide as much as you can for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's a tough a lot of times, but there's a lot of blessings in having a disabled child for sure. Sometimes you got to search for him, but that's one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, how did you originally get into digital marketing?
So it's a really long story. So I'm going to give you the condensed story. It was running a business. The owner of the business said, hey, we're going to get into digital marketing. This was 22 years ago, something like that. So a long time ago. And we're going to, you know, start offering our products and online, and we're going to reach consumers online. And I was living in Seattle at the time. And I thought, you're nuts. Like, you are crazy. What are you thinking? Like, you're going to open up all this price shopping and cost are, you know, our margins are going to go down. We're going to make less money. And, you know, it's not going to be a good experience for us by any means. I certainly wasn't, you know, in my young 20s, wasn't thinking about consumers, how digital would benefit them. And I literally quit the job over it. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I was so against digital marketing and advertising that I quit. Huge job, and went to work for an owner who didn't see digital marketing as being the future. So that's kind of how I got into it. How it evolved from there is several years later, when obviously I was proven to be wrong about how consumers find business product services that they would do business with. I ended up working for a company. It was just, you know, a blessing or a luck or what have you, that knew that I had experience in an industry, knew that I knew a little bit about digital marketing at the time, but thought I could speak specifically to their customers, of which I could. And so they hired me. And in a couple of months, I loved it. I mean, I just absolutely loved digital marketing. And I just loved how this new way patients were finding people. And I thought, okay, here's a way you can compete, right? Really kind of makes you competitive without necessarily just measuring sales, for instance. So that's how I got into it. By not wanting to get into it, it was a completely accidental, and here I am now.
Yeah, that's so interesting. You were just like, it's interesting that you were so dead set against it, and then it just turned out to be something like a hidden passion. I love that story.
Yeah, it's, you know, that and, you know, some other reads and what have you's really kind of changed my mind a lot about a lot of things, that you just always have to be trying to prove yourself wrong. Everyone, you know, has a product or an idea, and, you know, they go around and they ask their friends and family, like, hey, do you think this is a good idea? And everybody always says yes. Like, yes, oh, that's a great idea. We support you. We think you're brilliant. We think you're smart. And no one goes around and asking people to say, hey, tell me why this won't work. Tell me why this is a dumb idea, or why this sucks, or why this is just not going to work out. Mm-hmm. And the truth is most things won't work out, right? Most things aren't going to come to fruition, unfortunately. And a big part of it is because people are too busy looking for affirmations without actually testing a product. So now my philosophy is like, be radically open. I stole this, of course, but be radically open to being wrong. Have people prove you wrong instead of asking everyone to tell you you are right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes so much sense. Interesting. And then so... yeah. Tell me about your journey of starting Omni Premier Marketing.
It's been a long haul. So we started, about 12 years ago. So it's been quite some time. When we started the company, I actually thought, let's get out of a niche and let's not be niche specific, and let's offer services to all types of businesses. I personally enjoy learning about all types of business. It doesn't matter what they do. I like to figure out who their customer is, what needs they're solving, what problems they're solving, how they're making money. That's my favorite thing to do, is to figure out, you know, how's the business making money. Mm-hmm. So we thought we would be generic, right? We would serve anyone and everyone. And after about 6 months, we decided, hey, that's a bad idea. Let's just be in a specific niche. We decided to work with plastic surgeons. That's where we started. Obviously, we've evolved. We are now, most of our clients are dentists and ENTs. We started with plastic surgery niche. Mm-hmm. Love that niche, highly consumer driven. The SEO was a big part of it. I mean, most people are finding their plastic surgeons and doing searches, just like almost everything now, but specifically in plastic surgeons, the patients' profits from surgery are very high. Mm-hmm. So just an additional surgery a month is, you know, a significant return on investment for the client. Mm-hmm. That's how we started. Of course, we've evolved, as I've mentioned before, but it was kind of a plastic surgeon called us and asked if we could help. And that's how we figured out, yes, we can help plastic surgeons. And that's how we got started.
That's really interesting. And then so in those early days, how did you bring on those first few clients?
So, that's a great question. We filled out contact forms on websites.
Okay. So you just did the cold outreach strategy.
Bam. I mean, not proud of it by any means, but yeah, 100% cold outreach. Yeah. We would literally, I had three boys, as I mentioned before, they were little at the time. And at mm-hmm. night, I would go on and find websites that were horrific, that were on page 2 or 3, and just send a form and say, hey, we can do an analysis. Let's have a strategy session. Let's talk about how this will work out. And we would get phone calls. People would, you know, it would probably 1 out of 50. It wasn't great. I think that probably doesn't work anymore. We haven't tried it in 10 years.
Yeah.
this now is that most people are getting inundated with forms on their website, and decision makers aren't looking at leads that are coming in from websites. So I'm not sure that would work today, but if you got free time on your hand, and you got nothing else going on, why not give it a go? So that's how we started.
Interesting. Okay. Very cool. And then, so, you know, fast forward to today, how are you guys bringing leads into your agency and closing those prospects?
So the quick, the most frank answer to that is that we haven't been. So we have been fortunate and also I'm cursed that all of our business comes from, or has in the last 5 years, has come from referrals.
Wow. 100% of it.
100% of it. Yeah. So
amazing.
It is amazing, but it's not, I don't recommend it to anyone. And in fact, we're changing that significantly. So there's a lot of problems that happen when you're just working with referrals. So you're not as in control of it as you are if you're doing something like cold outreach, or you're running, you know, if you're running funnels on social media, or you name it, knocking on doors, or that doesn't matter. If you're solely just trying to build a business on referrals, there's a lot of cold spots. You know, you could go 6 months without a referral, and unless you're a strong business, that's a lot can't do that. We've been around for a while, that we can go, if we didn't take on a new client for 6 months, we'd be fine. Most companies, that's not the case. Not something I recommend. I will tell you, we are changing that. We have decided that, you know, we are going to aggressively market ourselves. We have just started working on campaigns, doing cold outreach, but doing it a little differently than most are. One of the things that we're doing is I'm running searches. You know, if you pull open a browser and you search whatever niche your agency's in, and you search that niche in your city, you're going to find, and you search the word free, you're going to find that there's paid ads running for, you know, free chiropractor or free psychologist or free lawyer. Nobody wants to advertise that they're giving away free services, right? So it's just a lazy paid ad campaign where they're not using negative keywords properly. Shoot a quick Loom video on that. Show them like, hey, look it, I found this for you. Here's a tremendous amount of value. If you use the word free or college or university or name it as a negative keyword, it's going to stop you from spending a portion of your budget on keywords that on clicks that you don't want. And in return, what's going to happen is you're going to have more budget to spend on good keywords, which is going to significantly increase your return on investment. If you think about it, if you're a plastic surgeon, for instance, and you Google pro bono plastic surgery, it's there. I mean, people are doing paid ads on that. Very few do any pro bono plastic surgery. And if they do, they're doing it through hospitals. They're not doing it through Google search. They don't need to spend $60 or $70 or $80. You know, I just saw yesterday that 70 of the top 100 keywords, paid keywords, are for lawyers. So if you search the term free family lawyer or free, you know, criminal lawyer, you're spending $40, $50, $60, $70 for that click. The very next click after you've exhausted your budget could be a $10, $15, $20,000 case, a $30,000 case. So by not properly optimizing your campaigns, it's businesses are losing tens of thousands of dollars a year, if not more. And it's a really easy way to show them like, hey, you could fix this really quick and make a bunch of money. So now this cold outreach campaign, instead of, hey, you know, we're good, give us a call, it's like, here's some value. Here's something that you can do right now to have an impact on your business. And by the way, if you want to talk to me about it, my phone line's open. So,
okay. So you've come up with this unique strategy that can help prospects, and you're using that as a way to add value to them and just, you know, open that conversation from there.
That's right. Yeah. If they never contact us again, if they never have anything to do with us, we've given them something, we've given them a gift that can certainly benefit them forever. So if they don't call us, great. We still did a great job by that particular person, even though they weren't a client for us.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And then do you have a follow-up strategy with those prospects? Or it's, you know, just like the initial reach out, offer them value. And then, you know, if they raise their hand, then you would, you know, nurture the relationship from there? Or is it just a one touch to start?
No, we certainly have a process in place where we are touching them 4 or 5 times over the period of 1 month. We're not doing any cold calling at all. Something I would recommend for a lot of businesses, especially one where, you know, you can get in touch with get through a gatekeeper if there's one present, or if you know there's no gatekeeper. You know, I think about real estate all the time. What a great niche to market in, because all agents pick up their phone. They put their cell phones on everything, right? Mm-hmm. So it's pretty easy to get through to decision makers in real estate. If you can get through them, I would add cold calling to anything that you're doing. If you're doing any type of outreaching, make an actual phone call as well. But no, we're touching them 5 or 6 times. I should say we're touching them 4 or 5 times right away and then putting them on a long-term drip after that.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Very cool. So are there any other strategies that you're going to be implementing now that you're switching up your sales strategy?
So we are actually running Facebook ads. I'm building out a Facebook ad campaign for the first time for ourselves. Obviously, we've been doing it for clients for quite some time, but for ourselves, we're doing it. And we've invested a lot into video and just creating content. You know, I like creating content myself. I just get busy and stop doing it. So I'm making it, you know, an hour of a day of creating content. We actually have 2 books being written. One will be out within 6 weeks. That is basically a general guide to digital marketing for dental practices. And then the second book, the title yet, is about building solid marketing plans, which obviously digital advertising is part of that, but really helping practices understand what they need to do in order to be successful. So obviously advertising those books, giving those books away and creating content is a big part of our plan.
Very cool. I love that. So what would you say has been the biggest overall challenge that you've had to overcome as you've been growing your agency?
That's a really good question. You know, team is always difficult in this environment. We've never used outsourcing. But most of our competitors do. I know of someone in the plastic surgery space, for instance, who, you know, they have over 1,000 clients, they have 3 employees. Everything else is outsourced, right? It's an owner and a couple of project managers and outsourcing. So not doing that, although I'm not against it. I actually see where you can bring a ton of value to your clients by doing that. And if your focus is on improving value and products, services for your customers, by all means, go for it. I'm not against it. For a long period of time, I was. I think team is a big part of it. And then, of course, it's always yourself, right? You are always your own worst enemy. I think chasing projects has been tough. And then the other thing that we're really working on is we've always been highly customized. And I think that can be our right for the right types of clients, but trying to have your products, your solutions be, you know, maybe down to 2 or 3 choices, like one size, you know, 3 sizes fits 3 different groups. I think that's a pretty ideal thing to do. It'll cut down on, you know, labor cost, and it'll help you build a better product for your customer.
Okay. And then, so have you found it challenging hiring good team members?
I have, yeah. For myself, absolutely. And I'll tell you, and I think this is, it's an entrepreneurial thing. We all have to give ourselves a break. We all make mistakes and nobody's perfect. And if you're an entrepreneur, you're probably not the best at running like HR. That's probably not the best for you, but until you get to a certain size, you have to do that. You are in charge. And I think it's certainly something that everyone should learn more about in the beginning as soon as they start hiring. How to kind of slide a little bit from being an entrepreneur to helping supervise and lead a team. I think that's a big part of it. I think entrepreneurs, a lot of us, I think, are really difficult to work for. I think we're usually not the type of people that we can share a vision, but usually mapping out how to get there is not our strong point. That can be frustrating. I think another thing that, you know, we haven't done that we should do and everybody should do is really use some of the tools out there to test the personalities and traits of people that you're looking to work with. I think that can help you out a lot to really, you know, understand, is this a person I'm going to be able to work well with? Are they going to be able to work well with me? And I think taking a little bit of time to do that, as opposed to hiring people just because you like them, or you get the warm and fuzzies from them, or not hiring someone just because, you know, they just kind of rep you the wrong way.
Yeah,
it's definitely an area that is challenging and that I'm certainly investing in, and I think everybody should invest more time in.
Yeah, absolutely. So are there any tips that you would share with anyone who is going through the hiring process that you have found beneficial? I know you mentioned the personality test, that sort of thing. Are there any other tips that you would recommend?
Yeah, the number one thing that I would recommend, frankly, is when you have a job ad posted, and we have a few right now, and we're getting hundreds of applicants, be very specific and give very specific details on what you want that, how you want that applicant to respond, and see if they follow instructions. I have an ad out there right now, and in the ad it says respond, you know, basically when applying, respond to Patrick J, period, right? So not my full name, not my first name, nothing else, just Patrick J. And anybody who says, dear hiring manager, or Mr. Shavesty, or whatever, I throw them out. I'm not interested. If they can't follow instructions on the very simple job applicant, on the how to apply for the job, they're just not going to be a good fit long term. They're not taking the time. They don't seem to care. They're not reading the entire description. Mm-hmm. On the ad. I also ask three very specific questions with inside to see how they answer. In the interview process, I'll ask those questions again to make sure they still kind of line up. But if you're not setting a bar, what'll end up happening is you'll get a resume in that looks really just great. You're like, oh wow, they worked at Harvard, and or they went to Harvard and they worked for Apple and Google and, you know, all this stuff. You're like, this person's amazing. And you're just gonna get so excited about them that you'll get tunnel focused and probably end up hiring them without, you know, making sure that they do the things that you actually need them to do. So make sure they follow instructions. I think set it up and ask them that. I mean, you can just even in the middle of the ad say, hey, please tell us what your favorite movie is. And really kind of know that this person is going to follow instructions and cares.
Yeah. And another benefit to that as well is it's going to give you that short list as well that you can work from. You know, when you're getting hundreds of resumes, that's such a big time investment just to even go through them. So whenever you can, you know, easily shortlist your resumes to go through, that'll help save time.
Yeah. We've actually started, we're starting a recruiting program here, which we're really excited about. And part of that program, once they meet certain criteria and we know we're interested in interviewing them, before we actually do an interview, we use video ask and send them three questions or five questions. And then we get video responses from them. So we can actually see their responses to these questions without taking the time to meet with them in person. And if they answer those questions, we don't even care really what they say in them. If they answer those questions, we'll go ahead and schedule an actual interview with them, a face-to-face. Mm-hmm. And then we'll watch the answer to those questions and kind of see how they compare when we ask those questions again and during the physical interview. So another little tip out there.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very cool. So we're getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but do you have any, you know, final thoughts or words of wisdom that you'd like to share with our listeners? So any agency owners who may be listening?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, something that's helped me a lot that I've just recently done, get into a group, get into a mastermind group. I meet with one that's based in it's based in Florida. There's 200 agencies in it. I've just recently joined. A tremendous amount of value. So it kind of gets you off the island, and you can get with other CEOs. If it's okay for you to mention the group, I will. You can just tell me in a minute. But that's something I highly recommend you do. Get with peers, get with people that are trying to take their practice to another level. Get with people that are ahead of you and have done a better job than you have. And that's sometimes not easy for us to want to do. Usually we'll want to think that we're the best at what we do. You're not. Find with people that are better. So that's the huge tip right there. You
know? Yeah, that's such a great tip. And then, what's the name of the networking group?
Seven Figure Agency, Josh Nelson. You can check them out online. Like I said, it's so funny. You know, there's agencies that have been there for a year, and I tell them I've been there, you know, been in business 12 years, and they're like blown away by that. Mm-hmm. But I'm learning as much from people that have been in business for a year or shorter that than, you know, I am from people that have been in business 8, 9, 10 years.
Yeah.
Just meeting people and seeing what's going on in their practice, what's working, what's not working, tips, tricks, what have you. I highly recommend it. That's one of them. I think there's a few others out there. So far, I'm really impressed with a 7-figure agency though.
Very cool. I have definitely heard of that mastermind. So that's great to hear that you've had such great experiences.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's interesting. You never know where you're going to learn something from. You know, it's so important to just, you know, put that ego aside and just be open to connecting with people, asking questions, and you never know what you'll learn.
Yep. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Awesome. So where do you see yourself in Omni Premier Marketing in 5 years' time?
That's a great question. Definitely within 5 years' time, I won't be involved in day-to-day operations anymore. I don't think I'll ever stop talking to customers and clients. I love doing it, but I don't see myself involved in day-to-day.
It'll be more sales focused.
I think we'll be sales focused, but I think, you know, we'll our legacy clients, I'll continue to serve them, but I think we're going to be more process oriented for new clients that are coming on board, because I think it's great for them. It lowers their cost. I think it gives them outstanding results. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where we'll be. I would hope we're in multiple cities right now. We have one office in just outside of Denver in the tech center. Mm-hmm. We would love to have a couple of different locations. One issue that I think will help us with staffing is when you're in very high cost of living areas, that means wages are typically going to be higher too. Whereas if you're in some areas with lower cost of living, wages are a little bit better. So if you pay the employee the same amount, they can have a better life or a better lifestyle if cost of living. So I think we'll be in multiple locations and I'll be out of day to day. Those two things are going to happen for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are getting ready to now move on to the fast five, which are five rapid fire questions. So first question, what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
You know, there's so many. I devour books. I love reading books. Right now I'm reading a book, I think, called Gap Selling. That's fantastic. It's a great book. I've been around sales for almost 30 years, and I think that's a great book. I think the Ragamuffin Gospel might be the most impactful book that I've ever had. I'm somewhat spiritual. And what I love about that book in general is really teaches you, it's not a secular book by any means. But what I love about that book is that it really teaches you to give yourself a break. You know, it really helps you understand, you know, how to move forward when you don't live up to your own expectations for yourself or something. So yeah, we all need grace, and we can, entrepreneurs, business owners, you can beat yourself up so much by every mistake that you make. And
yeah,
it can kind of hang over you. And when you can just go, hey, you know what, I'm a human and I messed this up, but I'm going to do better and I learn from it, it's huge. So I think that book has just had a great impact on me for that. Just learning to give myself a little bit of grace here and there.
Yeah, those both sound like incredible recommendations.
Yeah.
And what does your morning routine look like?
So it depends on the day, but I try to keep it pretty similar. I get up very early. I try to not look at my phone first thing in the morning. I still do, but I try not to. Mm-hmm. And I work out. So first thing is work out. I then, after a workout, I'm fortunate to have, a home gym, which is great. So I have, complete home gym. I love it. I do the Peloton. That's awesome. Yeah. Yep. And I start there, and then I go right from there into some type of like me time. So typically, you know, I'll read, maybe meditate, a combination of both of those things, and really just try to spend at least 20 minutes or 30 minutes before anybody else is up in my house, except for my puppies, and just kind of give myself, you know, some me time, some time to develop myself and to just take care of myself. So that's how everybody should start their day. And it doesn't matter, by the way, I get up early, but I definitely don't believe that you need to get up early to be successful. Everybody has their own little clock. And if you're an afternoon person and you can make that work, get up in the afternoon. So you know, you don't have to be a 5 a.m. person in order to be successful. You figure out your clock and then stay set to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And even, you know, it's definitely more common having that morning routine, but you can also do an evening routine. So yeah, I know I quite often I'll do that and just, you know, do some journaling at the end of the day, do my workout. It's not ideal because you're usually tired, but you know, if you have a kid who wakes up super early and you can't really have that quiet time in the morning, you got to kind of figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. And then, so is there a CEO that you follow or study?
So there's actually not. And I know, you know, there's a lot that I like. I'll pay attention to certain authors and what they're saying and what they're going on. There's some out there that I follow more than others that I actually don't like what they're saying, but I follow them anyways, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a bunch. I've always enjoyed reading Mark Cuban. I know that's probably not, you know, it's probably a little bit of a cliche, but I think he offers nice bite-sized chunks of content that, you know, can really help you. I think there's others that have been around, like, you know, Jack Welch, who, you know, I don't know that there's a better CEO in the history of the planet than Jack Welch. But not so much. No, there's a lot of freelance people that I like. There's a lot of, you know, smaller people that I like. I don't agree with the way a lot of our CEOs in this country are running their businesses. I know mm-hmm. that they have to take care of their stockholders, and I get it. I don't blame them for that or judge them for that. But I think the way that most CEOs are doing things are not something that I would be happy with or proud of at the mm-hmm. end of my
life. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And then what is your favorite online tool?
I mean, it's got to be Google, right? No, I knew this question was coming. You know, I think it has to be. Other than that, as far as marketing is concerned, the Facebook ads library, I think, is a great tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can see you can get an idea of what's working. You know, you can find a lot of really good landing pages that way. You know, it's something that I check out quite frequently. Just yesterday, I was a product that I've never even thought about buying myself. I was checking out just to see, okay, how are they doing this, and kind of re-engineering how they're doing it. So I'd say Facebook ads library for a marketer is probably the best tool out there.
Okay, perfect. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
So I wish, it's not that I didn't know it, but I wish I had thought about it more. So if you know, the rule of seven when it comes to finances, I mean, that's it, right? So if you're a young listener, this will mean more to you. If you're an older listener, jump off now because I don't want to upset you. But if you're 25 years old and you've had a good deal of success and you're thinking, hey, I'm going to go buy a sports car, I'm going to buy a $100,000 Porsche, it's not going to cost you $100,000. If you're 25 years old, that car is going to cost you $1 million. Because if you took that $100,000, or I guess Porsche is $150,000 now, but if you took that $100,000 and put it in the bank in 7 years, it's $200,000. In 14 years, it's $400,000. Right. In 28 years, we're talking $1 million. So that's what that car actually costs. So think about purchases like that you're making. And like I said, I really love nice things. I really do. Mm-hmm. But when you're making purchases like that, you go, okay, is this watch worth $5,000? Yeah, it's worth $5,000. Right. You think about it that way. But if you go, wait a minute, if I don't buy this watch and I invest the money in 30 or 35 or when I'm, you know, 80 years old, it's worth this much. Are you mm-hmm. going to buy that watch at that time? So yeah, apply the rule of seven to any type of luxury purchases that you're making. That's something that I wish I had done.
Yeah. I think that's really great common sense advice. So yeah, really, really helpful. I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Patrick. It was a pleasure to have you on the podcast, and I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, Julia. Keep up the good work.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.